Hey, good afternoon, Juno. It's just a second or two before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Great lineup of guests today. Chris Schwartz is going to come in first, and he's brought the two chefs who are going to be running Salt and Saffron, the two new restaurants downtown. So we'll be talking about food on the first one, and then we'll be talking about beer for our second guest, because Andy Klein is bringing in Icy Bay IPA. So we'll be opening a bottle on the air and having a little sip and doing a review of their new beer. The Fireside Lecture Friday, or tonight, is the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center's Alaska Hummingbirds. Guests are Gwen Ballas and Cheryl Carruthers. They'll be in to tell us about what they're going to talk about. And Saturday, there's a Roller Girls bout, and so we're bringing in some of the Roller Girls, and some of the girls from Fairbanks are going to join them here, I hope, and so we'll be talking about that. All of that on Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned. It's time now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, Women's History Month gets kicked off each year through inducting outstanding women into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. As Lori Townsend tells us in the third story of a series, four of the 13 women inducted this year are Alaska Native.
Janie Leisk was inducted for her decades of work helping to bring together urban and rural Alaskans and for her work in leadership development for young Alaska Natives. Leisk is a past president of the Alaska Federation of Natives and the first Alaskans Institute. She says when she was in her 20s, her Haida Simshian father wanted to make sure she had a summer job in Anchorage before he went to the village of Metlakatla to fish in 1974.
So he took me down to the Alaska Federation of Natives, where Roger Lang was president, a fellow Simshian, and Roger put me to work putting people to work on a pipeline. And I stayed there for 15 years.
In addition to her work as president of First Alaskans Institute, Leisk was also a board member for the Chamber of Commerce and the board of Commonwealth North. She says having a father who loved playing basketball was a motivator.
Growing up in a sports family, I know all too well that individual success is really, truly a team effort. So I'd like to thank my teammates that I've had over the years.
Leisk mentors young people, telling them to find their gift, nurture it, and give back to their communities. In Anchorage, I'm Lori Townsend.
Tribes across the country look to business opportunities to create a sustainable economy, yet this often comes with a set of challenges. National Native News anchor Antonia Gonzalez reports from Las Vegas.
Patricia Riggs, the Economic Development Director for Isleta del Sur Pueblo, says her tribe used casino revenue to overcome previous economic challenges, but a lawsuit from the state of Texas shut down the casino in 2002.
We were so blindsided by the fact that our casino closed and we lost all those jobs that we couldn't see another vision for us. So when we stopped to evaluate what our situation was and started to look at different ways that we could diversify our economy, that is actually when we started moving forward.
She used resources from national organizations to create a department focused on sustainable development. Tribes across the country face economic and political hurdles as they seek to create a long-term plan. John Moores is CEO of the Bluestone Strategy Group. He says it's difficult to get businesses off the ground if there's no alignment with the tribal council, community, and economic development team. For example, Moores says one tribe they represent had the structure set up for 17 years, but was never able to move forward and develop a business, even with spending millions of dollars setting it up.
And it wasn't because of the separation documents, it was because there was misalignment on the purpose and the expectations of economic development. And so when that alignment isn't there, those businesses actually never existed. So how we addressed that is we actually went in through a two-day workshop and facilitated a discussion with council and the board on what the key priorities and initiatives and the purpose and training around economic development. So out of that came an action plan, a five-year action plan, that today, in the first year, they now have four successful operating businesses.
Native business leaders in the audience spoke about the need to collaborate and learn lessons from other tribes. The conference concluded on Thursday. In Las Vegas, I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
On this day in 1975, the Lakota Ray Lake Superior Band of Ojibwe settled their case against the state's power company. The company's dam flooded the reservation in the 1920s, destroying wild rice beds, hunting grounds, a tribal village, and a traditional burial ground. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support provided by the National Institutes of Health. The Center for American Indian Resilience is now accepting applications from Native American students for the Summer Research Enhancement Program through March 28th. Student interns will participate in a wide variety of ongoing public health research and health promotion projects. Interns receive research credits, housing at the Dene College Tsele campus, and a stipend. Go to nau.edu/cair for information and applications.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first set of guests are two chefs who are going to be cooking at two new restaurants downtown. One of them is in the location that used to be called Zephyr, but it's now called Salt. And Lionel is here, and he's taken over as the cook there. And with me also is a lovely lady from India who is going to be the chef at Saffron, which is in the location that used to be called Spratso, kind of across from the Baranoff. And the general manager of Salt is here with us as well. That's Chris Schwartz. So welcome, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's going to be food day. In a few moments, we're going to be sampling a brew from Alaskan Brewery. So I guess our theme today is food.
Yay.
Of course, we'll be breaking that up with some Rufus hummingbirds in the third section of the show as well. So, anyway, the decision to change the cuisine of all of these two restaurants laid, I think, largely with you and with Tracy, who is you have a relationship also with Tracy's Crab Shack, right, Chris?
Correct. I've been the manager of the Crab Shack for 5 years, the idea for Saffron. We're doing Indian food because of Sharmila.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about, you know, what she can do and her talents with the Indian cuisine. And same with Salt, with Lionel. We just want to play to their strengths. You know, what they do the best is what we decided we should do, basically.
If I'm right, Juneau currently has one Indian restaurant out in the valley, which is where the Booyah Grill used to be, and I can't remember the name of it.
The Clay Oven.
Oh, Clay Oven. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. All right. So I think people are going to probably flock to Saffron when you open the doors. I think April 1st is your opening date?
Yeah. Yeah. We are doing the soft opening on the 31st of March, which is the New Year's for our Indian lunar calendar.
Now, there are many different aspects to Indian cuisine. Will you be concentrating on one particular brand?
No. What I would like to do is, through Saffron, we are not just bringing the Indian cuisine to Juneau, but we are bringing an entire experience. It's like a cultural awareness, a cultural education, cultural experience period. So I want to introduce like South Indian cuisine, North Indian cuisine, vegetarian mainly,
mm-hmm.
meat, fish, everything, poultry, everything.
So across the board.
Yeah.
Will you be? Will it be menu, or are you going to do a buffet, or how will that
work? Yeah. Eventually, we will do a buffet, but right now we are going to run on a quick lunch menu. And elaborate dinner menu.
Oh, okay. So you'll be open, what, like 10
throughout
o'clock?
Throughout the day.
Throughout the day.
Okay. 11 to 10.
11 to 10. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Now, Lionel, you've made some changes, I think, in what was the Mediterranean cuisine that was kind of Zephyr's specialty.
Correct. We're looking, the kind of cuisine we have at Saul right now is progressive American. And with that being said, the menu, you know, is ever changing based on what we can get a hold of that's peak in season. So it's really trendy, but we like to keep it downright and simple.
Tell me about Progressive American. Give me a sample.
With Progressive American, it's pretty much following culinary trends.
Okay.
And deconstructing, you know, your simple dishes that maybe, let's just say, for instance, your mom's pot roast that she used to make you when you were a child. I like to put my own twist on that and maybe serve it in different textures, and just having developing flavors that just lead, you know, to a really, really good experience.
Now, you're a Juneau kid. You grew up
here. I am. I grew up here. I fell into the industry when my aunt owned the Valley Restaurant about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was hired on as her dishwasher. And since then, I just felt like the kitchen was my playground. And as soon as I graduated high school, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia for a couple years to attend culinary school. And then after that, I wanted to be back on the West Coast and took an externship job with the Lodge of Torrey Pines in San Diego. And then just worked for these really nice luxury hotels ever since. And I go to Napa Valley in Chicago just to gain motivation and stage. That's working for free for further education.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of keep those experiences and the creativity in the back of my pocket for when I come back home.
Sharmala, what's your history as a chef?
Oh, I have been into cooking since my first job as a catering personnel was when I was like 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always in India.
Uh-huh.
And I've always been into food with the blessing of my two most amazing grandmothers and my great grandmother. So that's the cuisine that I have picked up. We have been blessed by the heritage of wonderful cuisine. And I have been professionally into cooking for the past 13 years, and I just love food.
So you said a while back you wandered into Juneau and kind of fell in love with the place?
Yeah.
What is
my best friend, my sister, Kathy Hill, she lives like very close to here, and we listen to KTOO 24/7/365.
Good.
And she probably
India,
might
right?
be hearing back in India.
Oh, really?
She streams
amazing.
This channel. Uh-huh. And I came to visit her last year, and I totally fell in love with Juneau. And if Juneau was a man, I would marry him. This is my tagline of the day. So I totally love Juneau.
Well, welcome to our kind of
thank you.
Although I say rainy place, but the forecast for the next through the weekend, as a matter of fact, is for clear skies. So this blueness out there that we see in the sky is going to stay with us, according to weather folks.
Nice.
So it'll be a nice weekend.
Exciting.
This weekend. Yeah. Chris, you're relocating the Crab Shack next season.
We are. We're working on it right now, starting May 1st. We're planning on being ready by May 1st. It's going to be close. But the first cruise ship comes in May 1st. We're moving behind the Trove store. On that, there's a big deck that sits over the water. So it's going to be the same setup, the same outdoor shack, a bigger tent, more seating, just more comfortable for everybody. And we're going to have a little retail space inside as well. So we're really excited about it.
Good. Mm-hmm. Sharmila, you'll be doing some kind of grand opening probably on April 1st?
No. Grand opening will follow a little later.
Oh, okay.
Because one of the challenges of Juneau is we do not have any source here, which is local for ingredients and everything. So everything has to be shipped in from different locations. I brought like tons of stuff with me. And then more is coming, and all our equipment and our traditional cookware, dinner, dining ware, and everything that's like being shipped in. So we're looking somewhere like mid-April where we'll do. But 31st is like the auspicious day for us to
crack
the coconut. Mm-hmm. That's why we're gonna do that.
Okay.
So that will be a soft opening.
Uh-huh.
But we'll do runs.
But we'll do well. Okay. And
yeah.
Lionel, what's the what's on the event agenda for Salt?
You're
open now, and you
we're open now. Mm-hmm. Correct. And I've only been there the last 4 weeks, so we're slowly changing the menu to you know, something simple for right now that everyone enjoys.
Mm-hmm.
I put on a king crab risotto, which has been selling very, very well. It's a really nice solid appetizer that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We had a couple of events last week. So, he started, and we just kind of threw a lot of stuff at him. We had a wine dinner, wine tasting dinner, which went over really well.
Mm-hmm.
He did an amazing job with that. We did 7 courses with wine, and that was a huge success. And we hosted the St. Baldrick's Charity the Foundation Day shaving day,
mm-hmm.
which.
I know you must have been a participant.
I was a participant in that, yeah.
You've gone out rather nicely.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And so we threw a lot at him. So right now it's kind of – we're just going to try to let him just kind of do his thing with the menu and get to where he wants to be without a lot of events. That's kind of what we're hoping for.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Charmella, you missed St. Baldrick's. You should have –
I was there, but I chose to keep my hair. My lovely curls.
Yeah, and I noticed Lionel did the same thing.
Lionel's like Samson. He really likes his hair.
Good enough. Well, Salt is where Zephyr used to be. What's the address?
200 Seward Street.
200 Seward Street. Okay, open right now, and yes. A new progressive American menu with Lionel as the head chef. Saffron will open on April 1st. For those who don't know where Saffron is, it's across the street from the Baranoff, but what's the address?
It's
112 Franklin Street.
112 Franklin Street, okay, mm-hmm. Good enough. And Tracy's Crab Shack next. When are you going to open it up again?
We will be open May 1st.
May 1st, and it'll be relocated behind Trove on the deck out there with a new tent and all that sort of stuff.
Correct.
All right. So great opportunities for downtown dining. Thank you, folks, for posting us on this, and we'll all be there with our forks in our hands for your opening.
Thank
and
you.
We'll drop by Salt between now and then to stay alive until she opens up. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us all that.
Thank you very much.
Namaste, Juno.
Tired of paying those high heating bills month after month? Learn how to improve the comfort of your home while lowering your energy costs. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is sponsoring free classes to help you increase your home's energy efficiency. Attend one or all of the classes March 27th through 30th at the UAS Technical Education Center. Register online at ahfc.us or call 907-980-6374. This message brought to you by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
This is Bird Notes. Some birds have a lot to say, but few surpass the northern mockingbird. Within its range in the U.S., which is most of the country except the northern west and midwest, you'll recognize the mockingbird song instantly. A very distinctive song, but perhaps not a thing of beauty. But while the mockingbird may not sing beautifully, it's a virtuoso of variety, persistence, and mimicry. Mockingbirds sing all year, in the breeding season to attract mates, the rest of the year to claim feeding territories. In spring, a male mockingbird sings all day, hundreds of variations, then sings all through the night. The aptly named mockingbird is also an uncanny mimic. A mockingbird might imitate, in succession, birds as different as a bobwhite quail, a chat, a sandpiper, even a cardinal. Then cap it off with a meow of a cat and a few phrases of car alarm. And he's just getting warmed up. We'd like to thank listeners like you who support Bird Note and make these shows possible. Thank you.
It's 20 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News, and my next duty is indeed an arduous one, which I have to do periodically. Andy Klein has dropped into the studio one more time, and with him this time he brings Ice Bay IPA.
Icy Bay IPA,
and this is an attempt to capture the intensity of Alaska surf.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So our IPA, everyone, a lot of people are familiar with our IPA. It's always had that picture of a surfer outside of Yakutat.
Indeed.
And but what we found was, especially people outside of Alaska, they thought that was just some sort of made-up thing. They mm-hmm. didn't realize that guys were actually out there surfing in Alaska because it seems so crazy.
So I'm holding the bottle in my hand, yeah. and on the label now is an actual photograph of a guy in a dry suit, I
yep.
think?
Yeah, yep.
okay.
I think actually it's a wetsuit. I think it's a 4-millimeter wetsuit.
On the board at Yakutat, taking the wave.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So that guy's name is Frederick Dickerson, and his brother, Scott Dickerson, is a really great outdoor photographer. And so we're kind of partnering with Scott. He's a guy that's out there really living the life. He just did a midwinter trip where he took a friend's commercial fishing vessel, the Milo. They hit 800 miles of shoreline looking for surf breaks. And they got great photos of that, and that's one of the photos that they got that's now on the bottle of the IC Bay IPA.
Yakutat is world known.
Yep.
But they found other. We have more
yeah.
surf along the 800 miles.
I mean, in fact, IC Bay is not is north of Yakutat,
yeah.
and they found a surf break in IC Bay that they've been to. They found surf breaks. Yeah, all up and down the Pacific Coast, as you can imagine. There's hundreds and hundreds of miles of coastline there, and some are really remote, but they have cool surf breaks on them, so
Who
they went
knew?
And surfed them. Yeah,
Who
yeah.
knew?
They're out in search of of mysterious surf.
So with global warming, we'll be replacing all that area with beach.
Let's hope not. Let's keep it.
Let's keep it.
Do our part for a green earth. Actually, that's
yes,
part of what IC Bay IPA does is 1% of all the proceeds for IC Bay IPA. Goes to our coastal code, which is a coastal cleanup initiative that goes throughout all waterways that are in the areas where we distribute beer.
Okay, since we bring this up now, we'll get to the beer in a second.
Yeah.
You guys are self-sustaining at the brewery.
Somewhat. We use a spent grain boiler. So we use a boiler that then powers the brew kettle that is powered by the spent grain that comes out of our mash
yeah.
press filter. Right. So this product, this grain that we've used that's already been used for brewing would otherwise be a waste product. We'd have to ship it south, and usually it's sent down to cattle farmers. Of course, there's no cows in Juneau, so that's hard to deal with. We've always had to pay a lot of money to ship it south. And instead, now we're just hauling it out back and putting it in our specialized spent grain boiler after a process of drying it out. And we're now generating a lot of the power that it takes to brew beer with that. We're saving up to 70% of the diesel fuel we'd otherwise would use. So saving thousands and thousands of gallons of diesel fuel every year.
So green is really a thing as far as the corporate culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of it has to do with not just trying to be green, but trying to be innovative and efficient, because we're somewhat national 15-state beer company, but we're in Juneau, Alaska, and so everything has to be shipped in and everything has to be shipped out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of a little bit behind the eight ball already as far as efficiencies go compared to someone who's located in Bend or something like that, where, you know, they're connected by rail and connected by all kinds of efficient ways of shipping in and shipping out stuff. So we're always kind of, the history of Alaskan brewing has been to look for innovation that allows them to be more efficient, and then that efficiency leads to being more environmentally conscious as well.
You've really taken an initiative to move the beer out of the state. You're in like six or seven states on the West Coast. You're all over the place.
15 states.
15 states.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We're as far east as Texas and Wisconsin,
uh-huh.
and basically all the West Coast. Not Utah.
Now, are they
Utah's
see
a little weird with alcohol, so we don't get it. We're not
okay.
in Utah, but
are they going to see this beer?
They will. Yeah,
okay.
this will be in all 15 states where we distribute.
Now, you have Rough Draft that's local and
mm-hmm.
Rough Draft that's export.
That's right. Yeah,
okay.
We have the Rough Draft Limited and then the Rough Draft Export.
Right.
The export's the one that goes out. The Taku River Red right now is the Rough Draft Export that's out.
So and the then, Limiteds are kind of like Juneau, the favored son beer.
Yeah,
for
Alaska. We
yeah.
think it goes all throughout Alaska. But
yeah.
right now, Hoarfrost IPA is the one that's on as our Rough Draft Limited that's just available in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And that's a really nice kind of lighter tasting IPA, but a fairly potent IPA as far as its 7.5% alcohol content. But yeah. It's based on a German Pilsen malt and German Hallertauer hops, so it's got a very crisp, clean flavor to it. Really nice beer.
So I have the spec sheet in front of me. This is a 6.2%.
The IC Bay one is.
Yeah, the IC Bay is. Mm-hmm. And it's 65 international or IBUs. Is that International
That's right.
Bitterness Unit?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. So an IPA usually runs around 65 or so?
In the 60 to 70 kind of range is typically okay. where they are. Our old version of this IPA was 55 IBUs. So that one was a version of an IPA that had come out in 2007. We felt like we just wanted to refresh it a little bit. There's been really great West Coast IPAs, especially. That's a type of IPA that's kind mm-hmm. of come about that has a really intense hot flavor and a little bit more bitterness. So that's what people are really kind of looking for in IPAs. And we have a really great mellower beer called the Freeride APA mm-hmm. that for people who don't want it to be quite as bitter, we've got a great alternative for them there. So we felt like this kind of filled a spot that we weren't in.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but just as a comparison, like for instance, amber is what, somewhere down in the 30s?
Amber's, you are putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
Amber's even, I think, lower than 30 IBU. It's okay. very low in
yeah,
the bitterness.
So much more balanced.
The sweet, malty,
much sweet,
not very hoppy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's lower than that.
Yeah.
And then, kind of working your way up. You know, for instance, white is a very mellow, non-bitter beer that we put out. Or summer ale, not very bitter at all, more of a malty flavor. But then you get into the American pale ales, like Freeride APA and the... And then these IPAs, and then you get into hopothermia, double IPA, that's 70 IBUs, a lot more punch there,
more punch,
you know, and a bigger beer for people who want kind of a really bold taste.
Andy, we can talk all day, but I think we better try
it. The thing we ought to do here is,
okay.
Let's get, we got this one going
Wait,
here?
Yeah.
Got the effect mic on?
We
got
you. The,
we got
the
special effect mic.
There
right. it is, and we're going to...
Oh, I love that sound.
There it is. This is a good sound, too. The the pour. There it is. All right. Oh, look, Jeff Brown just came in.
Well, imagine that. Hi, Jeff.
I should tell everyone in Radioland, my first three guests are still
yes,
here.
Yes, they're
with
still
us.
Here, yes.
Scott walked in a few minutes ago. So the entire staff of KTOO
and Jeff
will be
brought
shortly.
You, brought you the beer because he doesn't want me handing it over the board.
Yeah, I understand. Nothing in the pots there.
But this one, here we go. And I'll open up another bottle that everyone else here in the studio can pass around here and get a little laugh of.
Oh, Scott's also here. Look, Scott. Hey, Scott. Everyone's here. Oh, I'm so popular when
yeah.
I come here.
Yeah, when you come with a bottle.
It has nothing to do with the beer. Well, cheers, everyone, and let me know what you guys think
yeah,
of the beer
awesome.
As we drink it. Yeah.
Cheers.
Oh.
So, Scott.
What do you think, Scott?
Instant review.
Mmm.
Thank you. Well done.
Hoppy, but not too hoppy.
Nah, for 65 IBU, that's not
that's right.
What,
yeah,
not
that's
balance.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's real nice.
It is
good. Thanks.
Approved.
Yeah. Good.
Approved.
Mm-hmm. The old hop profile on this was almost all Cascade hops, which is kind of a really strong Northwest hop variety. Not strong in flavor, but like just one that's used a lot. And now we added Apollo Summit. And a few other hop varieties as well to this to kind of bring more hop complexity and a little bit more aroma and flavor to it. But not really blow you out with bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Beautiful color.
Thank you, yeah.
Typical of the type of beer we're dealing with here. And
yep.
a nice head. It's got the head is very fine foam, very nice carbonation.
I want to do this again.
Oh, yeah.
One more. There's lots of people
we
in
are
here.
Up.
There's lots of people in here,
yes.
folks.
There we go.
This isn't just for us.
No.
Okay. Annie didn't get any yet. Plus, I know about three
Andy
or four more people are going to wander in as they hear the
I'm sure
as they hear
yes,
the broadcast.
As we
yeah.
Hear the bottle, yeah. Okay.
Did you guys
well,
get some over there? You guys got some? Okay.
We did
a little more. Okay. Oh, there you go.
So, tell me about the future. What's next?
Well, we're always doing new things with like pilot series and that kind of stuff. Right now, we got the jalapeno IPA.
We only got a couple of minutes, but
sure.
This pilot series is kind of cool because
yeah.
basically this is everybody in the brewery kind of sitting around saying we ought to make a beer that and. Everybody says, yeah, and here's how. And then everybody gets input on the thing, and then you start brewing up little batches of it and tasting and saying, well, maybe a little more cascade.
Yeah, our brewers are playing. We have a one barrel system, and so our brewers are. It's like the home brewer's dream system that we have there. It's a small one barrel system, but it's got all of the advantages of the steam that we have and all the other stuff that makes brewing very precise in our environment. So our brewers are able to. Yeah, experiment quite a bit and, use different ingredients. We're always really interested in trying to use local ingredients where we can. So that's where, for instance, the spruce tips that are in the winter ale, we're looking at different ideas there all the time, looking at different ways of incorporating new hop varieties. And that's one of the things that really drives our brewers a lot. There's new hop varieties coming out all the time. Some of them aren't even named yet. You know, you get a hop variety X5249. And, it's like, oh, X5249. 49. I read about that. There's these, brewers out there that are really excited about that one.
So what's coming up?
Yeah. It's just always these different experiments coming up. But in the pilot series next, we're going to return to our Imperial Red. And a lot of people remember that's got the king crab on the on the label. So we're going to be doing that. We've got our Double Black IPA coming up, and that's going to be late in the fall. And that's one that people really identify with.
My wife is a major fan.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's one that's coming up there. And then in just about a month, summer's going to be out. Going to have summer out. Yeah. ESB is going to be transitioning into summer. So if you're a fan of the ESB that we've had out for the last couple of months, that's a seasonal, and so that's going away in about a month or so, just kind of at the end of this month, the next few weeks. And then I should also mention that this Icy Bay IPA is a refresh of our Alaskan IPA. So if you're a fan of the Alaskan IPA, this is the new one that's coming out. And if you see some cases of the old one out, you might want to grab it if you're a fan. Do some taste comparisons, that kind of thing as well. This is going to be the new variety of IPA that we're doing.
Andy, I guess the only comment I'm left with is you're going to have to show some enthusiasm for this position.
I know. I've got to really. One of these days I'm going to come out of my shell.
I think you should.
I think it's going to happen.
Maybe we should be able to hear the fact that you really like your work.
I like beer. I'm not going to deny it. I like beer.
You are doing a great job of it, too. Thank you so much for bringing it down.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 21st of March, 2014. It's the birthday of the Syrian poet Nitzar Kabani, born in Damascus in 1923. It's the anniversary of the day Alcatraz was closed in San Francisco Bay, 1963, the federal prison. It was simply too expensive to operate. And it was on this day, 1965, thousands of marchers led by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. left Selma, Alabama, headed for Montgomery to protest the disenfranchisement of black voters. It was Dr. King's third attempt to make the march. The previous two had been turned back, but this time there were 25,000 marchers, and they got all the way to Montgomery. And today is the birthday of Johann Sebastian Bach, born in Eisenach, Germany in 1685, born into a large extended family of Lutheran musicians, many of whom were also named Johann. They were distinguished by their different middle names. His parents died when he was 10. He went off to live with his older brother, Johann Christoph, who was a church organist, and Bach became an organist himself, although he did not take his work all that seriously. He was known to sneak off during the sermon on Sunday morning to mess around with a local girl down in the wine cellar of the church. The girl was his second cousin, whom he would later marry. He was an organist in the court of the Duke Wilhelm Ernst in Weimar, where he wrote his Toccata and Fugue in D minor and Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. He got another job with Prince Leopold, and while he worked for him, he wrote the Brandenburg Concertos and the Well-Tempered Clavier. Bach had 7 children with his second cousin, Maria Barbara, 14 years of marriage, and after she died, he married a singer named Anna Magdalena, with whom he had 13 children, less than half of whom survived past the age of 5. 2 of his children went on to become musicians and composers in their own right. He was a happy family man. He was deeply devout. Bach once wrote that music should have no other end and aim than the glory of God and the recreation of the soul. Around the time he was 55, his eyesight started to deteriorate. By the time he was 65, it had gotten so bad that he underwent an operation which made him completely blind, and complications from the surgery led to his death a couple of months later. Here's a poem for today by Charles Simic, In My Long Night. I have toiled like a spider at his web in the dome of a church, where only the upraised eyes of martyrs in their torments could see me, where one cold spring day, with rumors of war in the air, my young parents brought me to be baptized by the priest, where years after, my grandmother was to lie in an open coffin, looking pleased to be done with having to bury other people, where I once saw a crow walk in, lured by the gold on the altar and the light the candles cast, while I dangled up there by a thread. In My Long Night, a poem by Charles Simic from his collection Master of Disguises, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 23 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next two guests are here to tell us about tonight's presentation at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitors Center. This is the weekly Friday night fireside lecture. It's a wonderful program because you can catch it at 6:30, but if you miss that or your dinner runs late or something, you can come at 8 o'clock and there's a repeat of the same program. So tonight's program is going to be on Alaskan hummingbirds. Gwen Bayless is here. She's a wildlife technician with the Tongass National Forest. And Brian Logan, who's a biologist with the Tongass National Forest, is also here. So the two of you are going to team up tonight and talk about rufous hummingbirds and other hummingbird species?
That's correct.
Yeah. So what are we likely to see right now around Juneau if we see hummingbirds?
Well,
it's not a common thing, I don't think, at this.
Yeah, we're being visited increasingly in the winter by the Anna's hummingbird.
Ah.
And our more common summer breeding hummingbird up here is going to be the rufous hummingbird.
So how do I know if I'm seeing what are the characteristics of Anna's hummingbird?
Well, an Anna's is a little bit larger than a rufous, and the females tend to be all green with a little bit of a dot behind their eye. And maybe just a few kind of pink-colored throat feathers. And then the males have a very large pink throat patch. And the rufous males are different. They're reddish-colored, and they have more of a reddish-golden throat patch.
Are hummingbirds in Alaska, are they a cooperative? Do they do a lot of good for our plants and like that? Is that part of the cycle? They pollinate, don't they?
Sure, they're one of the primary pollinators in the coastal rainforest, especially where we have...
Now, we don't have bees in large numbers.
Not in large numbers, right. Correct, yeah. And, you know, hummingbirds are pretty dependent on nectar from flowers as an energy source and a food source. So you'll often see them going from blossom to blossom on not only the blueberries, which are very common in the understories of our old growth forests, but in fireweed fields, for instance, and anywhere there's flowers in bloom, typically you're going to find rufous hummingbirds.
I'm under the impression that rufous, or all hummingbirds, have incredibly fast wing beats. Give me an idea of how that compares to, like, a bird that flaps its wings to fly.
Probably a hummingbird's going to be many times faster.
Okay.
And that's about 3,600 times a minute.
So this requires an immense amount of energy.
Immense, yes.
Yeah. So hummingbirds, if I remember the little bit of high school biology that I can hark back to here, I have to consume a great deal of food in order to maintain that energy in the course of a 24-hour day.
Sure. We did the math yesterday when we were doing a dry run for a presentation, and we figured it out. If a human being were to try to consume the same amount of calories relative to their weight, that you would have to consume, what did we say? 80 gallons of Kool-Aid a day.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of Kool-Aid.
Yeah. So bring out the mixer. We've got to get going here. Thank God we don't have to beat our wings that often in order just to stay
it's
on.
It's pretty amazing. Their wings appear as a blur when you see them, and they can move forwards and backwards, and they can hover. And their wings are actually moving, and they're doing a figure-eight motion. That allows them to, if you think about a helicopter and how it changes pitch of the prop itself.
So is that what the hummingbird does? Does the wing actually tilt?
Oh, yeah, and it does a figure eight.
Huh.
So it allows it to go every which way it wants. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, are there any other bird species that are related to hummingbirds? Are they like their own thing? Or?
Well, they're a distinct family, Trochilidae, and probably the closest relatives to that family in North America would be the kingfishers or the swifts. I think that's about where they branch off on the family tree. But they are a unique family.
Yeah. Is this are hummingbirds kind of your specialty? Is that something you've concentrated on?
No, I study all kinds of small land birds, but recently I've become more interested in hummingbirds as. The Forest Service initiated some studies last summer that I've been working on.
Alaska's lucky in that we have many species here that are not prevalent in other places because we have so much forest land still and long coastline and like that. Are hummingbirds more prevalent here than they are other places?
Well, here in Alaska, we actually have fewer species than other places. As you get farther north, you get less species. There's more hummingbirds.
I guess I should have said numbers.
yes, numbers.
Rather than species.
I don't have great density estimates, but as a birder, I would say that, we get big groups of hummingbirds, especially around the fireweed. And so numerically, I think that we have a lot.
Mm-hmm. I know eagles are so much more prevalent here. In the summertime, the tourists just go crazy over the numbers of eagles. And, it's kind of like, another eagle for us. We see them all the time. So, what other birds are currently flying around Juneau? Not a full catalog, but what's likely to be seen through our windows at this point?
Well, I think Brian mentioned seeing a big flock of red poles still around. That's mm-hmm. a nice finch that we only get in winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other day was the first day of spring, right? So soon we should see some waves of shorebirds migrating north.
Okay.
In a few weeks.
What will we see and where will we see them?
Oh, right here in Juneau, the wetlands are the best place.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And what species are in the wetlands?
Not right now, but the western sandpipers should be showing up fairly soon.
Like mid-May,
late April.
Late April,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how will I know I'm seeing a sandpiper?
They are... they're along the intertidal zone. They have relatively long legs and a long beak relative to their body. They're foraging in the mud flats, basically. They use the long bills to probe through the mud and the sand to find invertebrates.
How long will they be with us?
Not very long.
Ah.
They're just moving through for the most part.
And going where?
going north to the tundra primarily, okay. to their okay. nesting grounds. And one of the neat things that you can see right now are the rafts of scoter. You see them right there in Douglas Channel.
Yeah.
And there's thousands of them there out there right now, actually.
So most likely if I'm sitting there and I see a bunch of ducks on the water, those are scoter?
Scoter, yeah. They're, yeah. they're black, white-winged scoter. But they appear mostly black when you're seeing with your naked eye.
Okay, and then what will replace the sandpipers as they move through the wetlands? What comes next?
Well, I think it's just they're some of the earliest migrants.
Uh-huh.
The hummingbirds start showing up in April, actually. But April is really when the migrations really start. So then you'll have we should see some swans. We should see some geese as well. You get white-fronted geese and snow geese moving north. Canada geese come back, and they breed here as well. Wetlands are a pretty spectacular place. They would have to be, they're a must-visit site for any bird watcher that comes to Juneau.
There's a drive-out overlook. You have to be going the right direction because the four-lane doesn't allow a crossing there, but there's a drive-out overlook. Is that a good place to view these birds?
It's an okay place.
But there must be there's a butt there.
Yeah.
Where's better?
Get to them, well, get in your boat.
Okay.
Get in your boat and get out to where the Mendenhall empties into the channel.
Oh, okay.
Hike the airport trail.
Yeah.
That's the best place, the airport trail.
It's okay, so if you don't have a boat, then, or if you don't want to get your boat out and put it in the water this early.
Yeah.
So out around the airport trail.
The airport trail, for sure.
Okay. Okay. And are there, there are lots of guides to birding, but I find most of them to be so encyclopedic that they're not, they're almost not helpful to me. Do you know of any good local guides that kind of cut the number of species that I have to leaf through down in order to let me have some idea what I'm seeing?
Well, we have actually a free Forest Service publication called Finding Birds in Juneau.
Ah.
And you can get that at the Juneau Ranger District along with our other wildlife viewing brochures.
And expect a rush. There'll be a lot of people.
Great. Yeah, well, we have lots of them, and actually they're great publications, but they're almost out of date. So when those are gone, maybe we can talk about making a new one. But that will cut down the list of species because it tells you what to expect in each of our popular bird watching places like the wetlands and places like out on Douglas and the different habitats around town and what would be there. So that would get you started.
Well, it certainly gets my vote that there be a new edition of that, and I will rush out and get a copy of the current one because I see these birds, and I have great difficulty being a namer of things, and so I have to have some help. Okay, so tonight, 6:30, you folks are going to be doing the Fireside Lecture at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, Alaska's Hummingbirds. Gwen Bayless and Brian Logan, thank you so much for coming in and telling us what's going on and bringing us up to date on the birds in Juneau.
Certainly.
Thank you.
See you there.
No.
Yeah, tonight's presentation at the Fireside Lecture is Hummingbirds. Guests Gwen Bayless and Brian Logan will be talking about hummingbirds at 6:30, and then they'll repeat the program again at 8 o'clock. We have a different kind of birds in the studio right now. These roll around, and our lovely ladies who do the roller thing. So there's a big bout on Saturday, and some of these folks are from Fairbanks, I believe, and some are from here. So let's start over here, and if you would introduce yourselves with your roller names, I'd appreciate it.
I'm Jamie Lynn Smears, and I'm from Fairbanks.
Okay.
I'm Sabotage, and I'm with the Fairbanks Roller Girls.
I'm Poutine. I'm with the Fairbanks Roller Girls.
My name's Haywood Jabazoff, and I'm a ref for Juno Roller Girls.
I'm Southeast Manhandler, and I'm a skater for the Juno Roller Girls.
My name is Shorty Morena, and I skate with Juno Roller Girls, too.
Shorty, you're wearing a cast.
Yes.
That's going to probably keep you off your skates tonight, right?
Yes, yeah. Tomorrow and for another whole month and a half or so.
Dear, was this a roller accident or
yes.
Something else?
Oh. Yes, but I'm glad it happened there and not outside because I would have been even more mad.
Yeah, yeah, it happened in the moment of battle. Haywood, you are the ref for the match, is that right?
I'm one of our refs. I won't be reffing in the match on Saturday. We've got a really good crew of refs, and we've actually just added a few more to our team. And we've got a few coming down from Fairbanks, I believe, as well. So I'll probably just be hanging out in the bar.
Tell me about the job of the ref in a roller match. I mean, I understand, let's see, there's the jammers, mm-hmm. and then you've got the front line. What's it?
Blockers. The blockers.
The blockers. Okay, so you've got jammers and blockers. So where are you in all of that, and what are you doing while the match is going on?
I skate outside pack ref. We have there's a few different ref positions. We have three outside pack refs. We skate around. There's usually one of us in front of and one of us behind the pack, keeping an eye on the action from the outside, looking for cuts, you know, low blocks, anything going on that the inside refs can't see. And on the inside of the track, you'll have two refs that are designated for one for each team's jammer. Those are the jam refs. You'll have a front pack ref and a rear pack ref. And that way you keep an eye on everything that's happening. You've got, you know, a lot of eyes on a lot of skaters, making sure nobody's trying to get away with anything.
So now when you see somebody get away with something, what do you do?
Hopefully I don't see him getting away with anything because I'll catch him.
yeah.
But if I see a penalty, I blow one whistle and I call color, number, and penalty on the skater. So I would, you know, white 9-9 low block and signal to leave the track.
Okay. So
and at that point they have to leave the track immediately or they face extension of the penalty of another minute.
Now this is like hockey though. They're in the penalty box for a while and then they come back out.
Yeah.
Right?
Currently it's a minute. When we go to the new rule set, which our next bout will be under, there'll be 30-second penalties and that'll really increase the action with a lot more skaters on the track.
Okay. So girls, how does this feel when somebody blows the whistle on you? Have you had that happen?
Quite a few. We try to avoid it. Sometimes we're like, oh, they got us. And other times we're like, what? But you just have to listen to them because if you start talking back, they can, you know, send you longer. They can, you know, they can excuse you from the bout. So we try very hard to not argue with the refs and respect their decisions. And a lot of times after a bout, they'll come up and tell us, hey, you gave me the stink eye, but this is what really happened. And a lot of times the angle that we're skating at, we cannot see what they see. Yeah. So we think we're good, and they're like, nope, because they're at a different perspective.
So roller derby has really taken off down here in Juneau. How is it in Fairbanks? Do you get a lot of fans out for a match, for a bout?
Yeah, we have some consistent fans, and this is our fifth season that we've been bouting, so it continues to grow. Every time we have tryouts, we always have somebody showing up to try out, and we get new recruits, so it's ongoing.
Who do you bout against? Who comes to Fairbanks?
We've had lots of different teams come to Fairbanks. Juno came to Fairbanks last season. We had a tournament at the end of our season where we had the Yukon Roller Girls, Juno, help me out, ladies.
Denali
came up, which is Wasilla. So in the past, we've had teams from Canada, Washington, Michigan. We've played a lot of different teams in Fairbanks.
So this was Sabotage talking, right?
No? Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, so Juno folks, are they tough, these Fairbanks ladies?
Yeah, I think we're going to have an awesome bout tomorrow.
All right.
It's going to be a nail biter. I'm hoping it's till the last jam. And it's going to keep people on their toes and be exciting to watch.
Have they got anything patented that you guys are looking to be able to block out? Or
Well, their jammers are awesome.
Are they?
Their blockers are awesome. So we're just going to do our best. And I should say, I'm not skating. I'm not skating in the top. So
is,
the ladies are going to be doing it.
Is going to be on the... On the
there should be. Fingers crossed. We'll have a team. No, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a really good bout. I'm
so
really excited
where
about
is the
watching.
Bout?
It's at Centennial Hall.
Centennial Hall.
It's tomorrow.
What time?
The wheels are up at 7, but okay. Doors open at 6:15, and this is an all-ages show. We're going to have a wet and a dry side, so we'll have under 21 seating and then over 21 seating, so all ages are welcome, and you're going to want to get there early so you can get the best seats. Yep. We do have our suicide seating, which is right next to the track, that is 18 and up.
Yeah.
So it'll be a good show.
There's a little bit of a fee for getting in, but I think you folks donate some of that money, don't you?
We do. We donate 5% of our proceeds to a charity, and this bout's charity is Girls on the Run.
Okay.
So it's an organization through the school district and AWARE that helps with girls just kind of building great self-esteem, healthy lifestyles. So.
And when you have bouts in Fairbanks, do you all do that same thing? Do you donate to charity?
Yeah, the same thing. We donate 10% of our ticket sales, and it's depending on each bout, we have a different... agency that we
I think that's
to.
The same thing that you do down here. So everybody kind of gets a bite of the action on this mm-hmm. thing. Well, I'm not sure what is appropriate to say. I'd say break a leg, but we've already had that happen. So I won't say that. But this is exciting stuff, folks. You do such a tremendous job out there on the rink that it's just it's great fun to watch. So I heartily encourage everybody to jump out to Centennial Hall. About 6:15, 6:30, get a decent seat. If you are a true fan, take one of the suicide seats up in the front row. If not, then maybe a little further back so that you don't get splattered or anything like that during the thing. Go ahead.
And I want to give a shout-out to Rob Royce because I know he's going to be sitting in those suicide seats, and every time he builds a beer pyramid, hoping somebody will take it out.
Okay, good enough. All right, so this is coming up Saturday night. The Roller Girls bout with Fairbanks taking the court with our girls. So come on down, folks, and take a look at it. Thank you for all of you coming.
Thank you.
This week on Forum at 360, Decoding the Gas Line Project. How close is Alaska to a natural gas pipeline? Are there markets for Alaska's gas? Will the state become part owner in a gas line project? Join longtime Gasline observers Larry Persily, Tim Bradner, and Frank Amaduri as they explain and simplify the issues. That's Forum at 360, Decoding the Gasline Project, Friday at 8 p.m. on 360 North and on demand at 360north.org.
Has the romance disappeared from your latest love story? The mystery gone out of your whodunit? Then it's time to visit the Juneau Public Library. Kids, take a chance on a new novel. Adults, it's time for a blind date with a book. Find these surprise titles in both fiction and nonfiction at your local public library and unwrap a new favorite. Brought to you by the Friends of the Juneau Public Library. Visit juneau.org/library or find us on Facebook.
Thing to take note of here, there's a PA boot camp coming up, and you have to register for the thing, but basically the first part of it's free. Alaska New Media is offering a series of introductory one-day classes. These are free for Alaskan residents who want to learn about working on film productions. So the Production Assistance Boot Camp, it's a series of one-day workshops. They're held in various communities throughout Alaska, and ours here in Juneau is coming up, let's see, on April 6th from 9 to 5. It's being held at the Baranoff Hotel. So take a look at that and see if you'd be interested in taking part in the film industry in Juneau, Alaska. You're in tune with KTOO Juneau. We broadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS at Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much from listeners like you. Pat Moore, been your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.